Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Knowing that ultimately it's God who does the healing, Dr. Medici acts as the maestro, orchestrating a person's health through right timing and right therapies, using traditional, natural, alternative, and spiritual practices. Dr. Medici says it's time for people to wake up to their innate potential to heal and to be given a doctor who can orchestrate that healing. Dr. Medici is currently working toward his PhD in biochemistry at Long Beach University and is a licensed chiropractor with additional study in acupuncture, kinesiology, and quantum medicine. He's the curriculum director of the Santa Monica Shiatsu School and the clinic director at the Premier Center in Santa Monica, where he treats many famous names in Hollywood under nationally recognized Premier Labs owner and CEO Dr. Robert Marshall. Got a health question? Ask Dr. Medici live today on Straight Talk on Health. And now, here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. Hello, hello. Yeah, lots of degrees, lots of schooling. But something hasn't happened for me yet. And it sent me back to school 4 years ago towards a doctorate in chemistry. I ran up against cancer. No, I didn't have it, but I got close to patients that did have it. I lost my mother to cancer in 1994. That was a hint. I hate that disease. Maybe that's a problem. You can't have hate for things. But when you watch your loved ones rot away over 9 months with barely enough energy to say goodbye to their children, when you watch them burned to a crisp from radiation, chemotherapy, it really tests your faith. And it did mine. Only to find a good 10, 11 years later, to have myself intimately involved with patients, young patients. Not that it makes a difference, but when your patient is 37 years old with two children, beautiful on the inside, on the outside, a lovely family, a God-fearing human being, a spiritual being, and they are rotting away to cancer, well, after a loss of a mother, friends, seeing this as the great beast of our time, this extremely complicated illness, well, a young doctor is going to go full force and find cure. And that's what I did. Only I did not succeed. God had a bigger vision in mind for this woman and for a number of my patients. But I swore that I would go back to school, and I have, and I am studying to understand this illness because I don't think anybody's making a dent in it. We've had a couple of guys over the years, over the last century, and if you think this was a disease of the old days, 300 years ago, and the doctors just didn't know how to identify it, please do not think that. That is a ridiculous thought for the public to listen to that. And you hear these notions that, oh, well, we had cancer 200, 300, 400 years ago. We just couldn't identify it. That's nonsense. If you study medical history, doctors understood tumors. Thousands of years ago, the ancient Greeks understood cancer, and occasionally they would see it. But statistically, it began in the industrial age. And if you really study the growth of cancer in the United States, we never saw it on the farms. We began to see it as we industrialized. Big hint, right? The chemicals, of course. Between the chemicals and the demineralization of the food, we began our disastrous cancer journey. Then in the last 20 years, we've added another factor. So again, the demineralization of the food, the shift into industry, and then in the last 20 years, the electromagnetic age. Those are the three knockouts. You want to understand cancer and how the rates are growing? And yes, we can keep the people alive longer with technology. Yes, that's true. So we're winning the war against cancer in a sense. But in the other sense, it's more prevalent. It's moving from 1 out of 4 to 1 out of 3 to now 1 out of 2 some cancers. So we're not winning it on the other level. You've got to watch statistics. And you got to really understand, when you mire yourself in reality, in the reality of illness such as cancer, on one hand, you're hearing people slant statistics in their favor, meaning we're winning the war. And then on the other side, you've got your conspiratorialists who are the first, okay, to fantasize, but on the other side of the fence. And you're out there, the public, the innocent, honest public, as most of you are, trying to get reality. On either side, you're getting fantasy. I've seen patients of mine go down to Mexico, send money orders for $25,000 for 3 weeks of care with bad cancers, looking for an alternative cure. And I know they're wasting their money. How do you find the heart to tell somebody that when they've tried the Western approach and now they're down being experimented on in the holistic sense? And there's lots of places like that. Yes, cancer's an industry. Yes, it's pharmaceutically driven. Research is not quite where it's supposed to be, especially in this country. If I had cancer, I'd be in Europe. I would be in Germany. I would find the MD, PhDs out in Germany who live, eat, sleep, and breathe novel approaches that blend the best of the best. We do it in America, so we say. We do it in Mexico, so we say. But by and large, in these places, you're getting a hodgepodge of therapies that worked. Look for the progenitor of the cure. In other words, when somebody appears on the scene and says, I have a new approach that works, I can show statistics, and I will die on the cross to support that, that's the guy you go to. You got to have a doctor that takes a little risk. What we've got too often throughout the globe, America, Mexico, are these cancer clinics that just put together these nouveau alternative therapies that on paper make sense, but when you look at the statistics, they don't deliver. And you only search for that because in the mainstream allopathic medicine, the research scientists aren't coming up with good answers. And I'll give you perspectives on why. And let's get away from this idea that it's all about bad medical doctors that don't care. I think by and large that's nonsense. I think, yes, there's corporate interest driven to make sure that we don't get research money where we need it. But when you talk to the scientists, when you talk to the medical doctors, when you really get to know them, their hearts are in the right place. They're working hard. They don't have the perspectives. They have been indoctrinated into a paradigm that is dead. The biochemical paradigm, and we'll elaborate on this later, will never cure cancer. There's a biophysical and electromagnetic perspective that you have to bring to cancer functionally. Functionally, not mythically, not in terms of some groovy book you read about energy, but where energy meets the cell, where it changes the physiology of the cell all the way into the core of the cell, through the cell membrane, through the cytoplasm, through the nuclear membrane, into the double helix to repair this horrid initiation of cell replication, of a cell that misdivides, that divides at the pace that you don't want it, that sucks everything out of you into it, that has an intelligence. If we have time today, I will tell you stories, stories that will touch you, as all of us have suffered from this at one point or another in our nuclear and extended families. Two names need to be mentioned. Max Gerson, G-E-R-S-O-N. His daughter, Charlotte, many of you have heard this name already. If you haven't, get on Google, look it up. Max Gerson, the Gerson Clinic, down in Tijuana, in the Mexico area, thrown out of the United States, testified before the United States Senate in the 40s, testified and was ready to present hundreds of peer-reviewed cures. Not hopeful cures, not half cures, not semi-cures. People who were transitioning to the other side, who stood by him, cured completely. Hundreds of them. Hundreds. And he was thrown out of the United States. His data was not allowed to come into the courtroom. There were large demonstrations outside the courtroom. Those people were told to leave, cease and desist. And so he left and went to Mexico. Spent the rest of his life there curing cancer, curing other diseases, lupus, the autoimmune diseases, curing terrible things. And then there was Donald Kelly. Now, Donald Kelly, a little younger. I spoke to Donald Kelly in 2004 as I held a patient in my arms who was dying, and I was seeking cure with her, orchestrating her cure, using other doctors, which is what you're supposed to do when you don't have enough of a grip. You see, not go off into your own fantasy about how it's you and your patient and the rest of the world. When there's other people with other perspectives, you integrate in the trenches. And I spoke to Donald Kelly. Some of you may remember Steve McQueen. Others of you have no concept of Steve McQueen. Well, you remember Steve McQueen. He was the number one box office hit back in the 50s, 60s, 70s. And Steve McQueen got mesothelioma. He got a terminal lung cancer and went to Donald Kelly. Donald Kelly was a dentist. And somewhere, I believe, in the 60s, he got pancreatic cancer, which is a terrible cancer. It metastasizes very, very quickly. And he got it, and it went to his liver, and then it went to another organ. And he was dying. And he was a dentist. He didn't have any understanding of it. I spoke to Donald Kelly over 30 years later on the telephone. His story is legion. He figured it out. And he taught others. And he was spiritual and godly and willing to share with anyone that would listen. And he offered me, even 2 years before he passed away, an opportunity to come to Texas and learn his approach. This is a guy that statistically offered more cure in this century than any living human being in the United States, at least. And there's a doctor today, Nicholas Gonzalez. The Nick Gonzalez story, a medical doctor out of Cornell on the East Coast, Cornell Medical School, sent to Donald Kelly to see if Donald Kelly was the real thing or a hoax. And it changed that young doctor's life. Young Nick Gonzalez decided to study under Kelly after being sent in conjunction with the head of the National Cancer Institute, Robert Good. And Gonzalez went to Kelly and studied his results and saw hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of bona fide cures. People that were on their way out and that lived to talk about it 3 years, 5 years, 10 years later. Kelly had figured it out, and Gerson had figured it out. And yet Kelly then was destroyed by the corporate interests. Kelly had understood that at the root of cancer was a deficiency in the production of pancreatic enzyme. This is a understanding that at the turn of the century, different doctors and pathologists had understood. They understood that your pancreas, your digestive organ, secreted different types of enzymes that digest your food. But if your food was such that there would be an abundance, a surplus of that digestive enzyme, those enzymes would scan the blood, find the little cancerous cells, and as we all know, we produce cancer every day. You've heard that one. Of course, and the body scans it. You know, I did this show today on cancer. I waited 17 weeks to do this, because I'm going to make a lot of references to things that are on my site already. StraightTalk.cc, if this is your first time. I will continue to educate in more comprehensive ways, but you're going to have to get to the website to listen to the shows. These pancreatic enzymes will digest little cancer cells. They will digest small tumors. They will go after the cancer before the cancer proliferates. Kelly went so far to say that one of the reasons we see cancer today in modern day life is we don't eat organ meat anymore. Organ meat. Think of that. Think of the last time you thought of having grandma make you sweetbread, kidney, tripe, intestines, heart, brain. Nobody eats that anymore. Nobody wants to. And perhaps we're correct, because those organs are filthy today. Because as we've destroyed the ecosystem, the only thing we can maybe get away with is the meat. Worse yet, many of us don't want to eat the meat. So now we starve and create cancer for other reasons. But Kelly's point, and he should be the person to listen to. He's the guy that showed the statistics. Those statistics are available today. If you have cancer, there's a guy named Nicholas Gonzalez This is no big secret. Nick Gonzalez is all over the country. And he treats cancer. And he studies it as Kelly studied it. And he's a very straightforward, honest guy that works with his partner, Linda Isaacs, out of New York City. And if you get his number and he's available, he'll tell you, I can help you with this or I can't. He doesn't cure it all the time, but he's taking one of the best shots at it. And it's derived from a man, Donald Kelly, who really understood it. So right there we have a hint. Something in the food. Something we used to bring in abundance that we no longer do. And oddly enough, ironically enough, it's those weird organ meats. Back on the farm, and some of you grew up on a farm, remembered sweetbreads. Grandma's sweetbreads. Fried sweetbreads. But pancreas, from the organ of the animal, pancreas is loaded with these enzymes that eat cancer. Now, this isn't if, and, but, or maybe. This is definitely. Research was done. And no, just downing pancreatic enzyme isn't the single driving, the sole reason that someone cures from cancer or that cancer's prevented. There's lots of factors. But this thing about pancreatic enzyme was a big one. And so Donald Kelly extracted enzyme from animals, bottled it, and that was one of the things that drove the solution. And Nicholas Gonzalez today still uses extremely well-cultivated pancreatic enzyme, but it's part of a therapy, which includes the coffee enema. My God, where have we heard of that before? Every show I talk about the coffee enema. Do you know who brought the coffee enema to the United States? It was Max Gerson. And do you know how Max Gerson from Germany heard of it? In World War I, when the Germans fought the Russians on the front, on the Russian front, once again, this Russian front, where men were sent to die, a nurse needed to do an enema. Back then, 1914, you did enemas. You did enemas to bring down fevers. Remember, this is before drugs, when medical doctors were truly holistic. This nurse wants to give an injured man an enema. She doesn't have water, and so she gives him an enema with coffee and sees what happened, and that was the beginning of the coffee enema. This lay dead in the notes. It lay dead in the notes, dead and buried. Gerson resurrected it. Gerson used it. It was critical until Gerson, with his therapy, and I'll talk a bit about that perhaps, until Gerson used coffee enemas, he couldn't cure cancer. So Kelly, studying Gerson, Kelly knew that coffee enema was vital. The coffee enema, once again, vital for everything if it works. So go to show number one, straighttalk.cc. Listen to that. Call into the order lines. Get it wherever you have to get it. But understand this. However you do a coffee enema, you must achieve biliary patency. That means when you release the liquid from your body, there has to be yellow-green fluid in it. And unless there's yellow-green fluid in it, you're not releasing bile. And if you're not releasing bile, you're not going to be able to pull the poisons out of the body. It's simple, and it's in a nutshell. So Kelly would use pancreatic enzymes in high dosages. These enzymes that you weren't producing because you weren't eating right, because of demineralized food, would scan your body, seeking out the tumor, and it would start to eat the shell off the tumor. This is the problem in therapy with tumors. This is why so many of these studies we do herbally on whether this herb cures cancer, fixes cancer, helps cancer, reduces tumors, are so flawed. Because we do in vitro studies. We do test tube studies. If you have a tumor, a cancerous group of cells, and you sprinkle an anti-cancer herb on it, that it reduces the growth of the tumor, that it kills the tumor, however you want to assess its efficacy, is partly nonsense. Because tumors have big, thick shells. Tumors are biofilms. And your immune system can't get into a tumor once it guards itself inside that biofilm. And that was the secret of these pancreatic enzymes. They would scour the body, and before the tumor got too big, the pancreatic enzyme digests things, right? It would digest foreign substances. It would digest that which it didn't recognize as self, as one of its own. So it would not eat your tissue. It would eat the tumor, the surrounding thick sack of the tumor. And once it broke the sack, then your immune system, your killer cells, could get in and dissolve the tumor. So this 1-2 approach, break the shell, spill out the guts, and then let your immune system dissolve it. Now, when you have tumors, when your cancer index, so to speak, is high, when you're toxic, when your immune system is just distracted, and you start taking these enzymes, you're going to get sick. And Kelly would tell the people, you're going to get sick, which is why you had to eat so well. And so Kelly would what? Make sure you were doing 1 to 2 coffee enemas a day. Now, this is heavyweight stuff because you're passing through. You're fighting for your life, so it all stops down. And some of you in the audience know what that's like. It's all about morning, noon, and night, what you're going to do to bring life back into your body. So Kelly had to bring in the coffee enema, but you have to see the bile flow. Then you can go in, you can kill what you have to kill, you can dissolve what you have to dissolve, and the toxic load comes out the other end of your body. And that was the 1-2 punch. That was the essence of Donald Kelly, but that was huge. And then there was one more thing. And when you talk to doctors who get into the cancer game, the good ones, they are spiritual men. I don't care where they're from. They are spiritual men and women. Because when you deal as a doctor with good people who are passing through, you are in communion with God. And I would say sometimes you're fighting the devil, and you will feel it. And I don't want to go further than that. This isn't theology. But the bottom line is, from Kelly to Gerson to Gonzalez to the whole list, to the little bit that I've worked on these levels, you're talking to God. And if your patient doesn't have a proper dialogue with God, if the spiritual axis, AXIS, is not in alignment, they don't make it. Even then, the herbs don't work. Even then, the enzymes don't work. Nothing, I repeat, nothing is more dominant to the issue of healing than where the spirit lives. Which is just another way of saying God's children perish, sometimes for lack of faith, and sometimes for lack of knowledge, and sometimes for both. But you have to bring that in. You can't talk about cancer unless you talk about faith. And I would say, and many will agree to this, and I worked for a lot of years. I worked on this level to 2005, then I quit. I quit because I wanted more information. And what you find is that people very often, and again, there's no laws. This is not dogma. It's case by case by case. But one thing that binds many people together who get cancer, long before they know they have cancer, I'm sure this was the case with many of my patients. One thing that binds them all together is they stopped living long before they got cancer. A part of them dies. They lose their faith. They don't really know if they want to be here. And they are obliged. By who? I don't know. I'm not a theologian. But I can tell you that they are obliged. They are taken to the other state. So if you're looking to prevent it, the first thing you do before you say hello to your significant other, before you go to work, before you put on your clothes, is you ask yourself whether or not you really want to be here. And you get in touch with that part of you that's just checking out. It's not worth it anymore. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. When Geneva, I'll call her Geneva. Her name, of course, was not Geneva. When Geneva died in my arms with her husband there and her priest and her family and her children, and we all went ballistic, and you know that moment when they take their last breath. When that moment occurred, that was a woman who didn't want to be here anymore. She just didn't want to be here. And that's very tough for family to understand. And that's very tough for a doctor that's asked to help, to cure, to understand. And yet that was God's will. And I didn't understand that until that experience in 2004. So you can't talk about cancer unless you talk about these things. Anybody that understands it from the psycho-emotional, psycho-spiritual realm will talk this way. That's the faith part. See, but the travesty, the parody, what's ridiculous is you got to get the whole enchilada down here. You just can't talk about the spirit in the sense of faith and leave out the coffee enema or the demineralized food. Okay. Breast cancer. I want to talk about breast cancer. Fat. The breast is made of fat. F-A-T. That's what gives the breast its wonderful shape. Now, fat mixes with carcinogens. Tons of carcinogens. All your polycyclic aromatics, your benzene, toluene, this, that, all your benzene-derived chemicals that are carcinogens are fat-soluble. That means you pour them in to oil and they mix. Very simple. Pesticides, petrochemicals, tons of what we're told are carcinogenic. You can just pour a bottle of them into a bottle of oil and they'll mix. They're fat-soluble. So what do they do when they go into the body? They look for fat. That's why there's so much breast cancer. But that's not enough, you see. Look at the consciousness around the breast. I ask you, my fine listeners, what is one of the most prevalent, popular, almost mandatory plastic surgeries we do today? The breast augmentation. Because America's got this fixation on breast. A woman is her breast. And we don't like to hear that, right? And we know that's not true. And yet we go out and we augment the breasts. And the doctors are glad to do it. And I'm not going to pass judgment on it. But we have a breast consciousness. I'm trying to tell you, there's a lot of psyche. There's a lot of psyche behind the breast. So those breasts are on. You're either sitting there showing them off because they're beautiful and you're all happy about them. And from the day you hit puberty, you got these messages subliminally or on the surface that those perky little breasts that were budding were God's gift to the world. Or what? Or some teacher. I know when I grew up in Catholic school, I remember my mother telling me in Catholic school, as her breasts developed, when she stood up straight, the nun would smack her in the back of the head and say, "Don't show your breasts. That's the devil." That's what she was shown. And this is 1940. Okay, that's this century. That's 70 years ago. I know these things don't go on today. We're not uptight about breasts today. Your breasts are too small. Your breasts are too big. The nipple's not the right shape. The areola doesn't look good. The bra doesn't fit. All this breast consciousness, there's a lot of psyche behind breast. So what do you have ultimately? You have a depolarized tissue, a depolarized tissue. You know, I'm doing this show here. We've been talking 30 minutes. I could probably go 5 hours on this. It's all off the top of my head. I realize as I talk to you, I am so vested in this illness. I think this is where, if I've ever felt the devil, it's when I watch someone rot away to this disease. Well, that's my personal thing. But I realize how vested I am in this topic. So there you have this breast tissue and this image of it that may not be emitting vibrance. And as we age, ladies, what happens? We begin to pull forward in our shoulders. So I want to bring something else in here. Through the back door, I'm talking about psyche. I'm giving you a story of a certain type of cancer that I could apply to many cancers. And I'm talking about psyche. Then I'm talking about chemistry, fat-soluble toxins binding to the fatty tissue in the breast. And then I'm going to talk about structure. Now, somebody out there is thinking, that's the rule of four. The rule of four. That's what he's been talking about on the other shows. That here we have this fat in the breast. We've got this psyche sometimes that doesn't create resonance. Resonance. Two shows ago, resonance in the body. Meaning the electrical field starts to what? Deplete. Because the spirit is not full through the tissue. And then we have a structural shift. Structure. The arms internally rotate as the head drops forward, as the shoulders come forward, as we cave in. Now, under the armpit are your what? Axillary, armpit lymph nodes, your drainage ports. And once you bring the head forward and internally rotate the shoulders and collapse into the breast and then strangle the breast with a bra, worse yet, a steel bra. Once you do that, you can't drain the breast. Now, you can understand this. And if you don't, get on my website later and listen to the show again. And again and again until you do. You've got the artery, arterial pressure. The artery, the big, thick, muscular artery, pumping fat-soluble poisons into the fat of the breast. And then you've got a part of the body that some women, unfortunately, identify as something less than beautiful. My breasts are this. My breasts are that. They're not big enough. They're too big. Whatever it might be. Not to mention the augmentations. The consciousness around the tissue is off. OFF, off. And then we internally rotate, slouch at the shoulders, and now we can't drain the poisons that we pump in through the lymph and through the veins. I want you to get this. It's a central principle in physiology. The arteries always get, or I shouldn't say always, the arteries pump under high pressure. The arterial system pumps under high pressure, thus high blood pressure. So you can deliver the chemical, but can you drain it out? No! The drainage systems, venous and lymphatic, are low pressure systems. So ultimately, in the balance of trade, what happens after you have this structural shift, as you hit your 40s and you're slouching, as you hit your 50s and you're losing bone, and your head is collapsing on your neck, and you're starting to look older, and no one's intervening on your behalf to bring back your youth, structurally and otherwise. You cannot drain the poison you pump into the breast. You cannot drain it out of the breast through the lymph and the venous system. When you put those three things together, poisons, the psychic aspect to it, and the structural problem, you're looking for trouble. That's one out of every three women, I think it is. I'm not a statistic guy, but it's way up there. It's not right. So we got one out of every three approximately today getting some form of breast issue. Psyche, structure, and blood chemistry. Now, what happens when you get the coffee enema? What happens when you have biliary patency? I'll tell you what happens. Those breasts pump out their poisons faster. Where are the studies to prove this? Man, if you have to wait for some underfinanced research chemist to prove what I just said, I pity you. I truly pity you. Use your common sense. Seek out therapies and ask yourself honestly, along with your doctor, ask yourself honestly if they work. When you move bile through a coffee enema, you will feel the difference if you do it correctly. And the point is that if you open up the bile ducts, you will drain the fat out of the breast faster. As we drain fat, where do all the fat-soluble toxins, where do fat-soluble poisons go as they devolve, as they dissolve in your tissue? Out your kidneys? No. The kidneys only take water-soluble toxins. The fat-soluble toxins come out in your poop, in the stool. They have to go through the gallbladder first, through the liver first. The liver dumps them into the gallbladder. The gallbladder dumps them into the small intestine. The small intestine takes it to the large intestine, and you defecate it out of your body. That is the system God gave us to stay healthy with. When we eat the bad fats and the junk, we fibrose, we scar up the bile ducts, the bile canaliculi deep up in the organ, the liver, begin to close up. They don't flow the bile anymore. So you do the coffee enema and nothing comes out. You say, I did it and I don't feel differently. A good coffee enema, you'll talk to God off a good coffee enema. But you got to do it right. And so you need the knowledge. And what happens? You'll drain it out. Okay, so here's a little proof for you, ladies. Cysts. The breast cyst. The fibroadenoma. The fatty cysts. Not the fatty cysts. The little tiny cysts. Polycystic breasts. You rub into the breast and it's fibrous. Right. It's not that you're going to get cancer if you have that. There's no research hasn't shown that there's a correlation. I think that's garbage. I think that's nonsense. I think if the breast is cystic, you have entire legions of medicine outside strict Western medicine that will tell you that you need to get rid of those cysts in your breast. And you know what'll do that? A coffee enema. You know what'll give them to you? Coffee. 2 or 3 cups a day. But the enema has a completely different effect. The enema will start to open up the lymphatic system underneath your armpits, and it will start to drain the cyst-causing chemicals out of the breast. It will break up the cysts. If you get good at coffee enemas, you'll see that correlation. It goes way, way, way deeper than that. That's why Gerson and Kelly use them so much. Now, here's a perspective on cancer. You think of the cell as a grape. It's a grape. And that grape has a cell membrane. The story of cancer begins with the countless, infinite number of hits, bricks, clubs, kicks to the cell membrane. And the cell membrane, if it's got its essential fatty acids, does a wonderful job of keeping out the chemicals, of keeping out the viruses, of keeping out the parasites. Anything that wants to get into the cell that's not good for the cell has to go through the door, the membrane. So right away, you've got to talk about free radical and antioxidant. When the body is too busy fighting wars on so many fronts, when it's spread too thin, when its antioxidant production is spread too thin, the membrane takes too many hits and something gets in. Right, so take more antioxidants. Great. I'm not doing this show to tell you what you already know. And if you think that just because you take antioxidants, you've got some massive safeguard, it's not that simple. There are hundreds of factors that determine whether or not a cell will resist the hundreds of types of assailants that will eventually get through the cell membrane, get through the cytoplasm. So that's like the gush. It's the sweet fruit of the grape. And then it'll get to the seed. of the grape. Yes, grapes did have seeds at one time. We have seedless grapes now. Sterilized grapes. Everything is sterilized for God knows what reason. But now we have these seeds, and these viruses or chemicals or what? Vibrations, bad radiation, get through the seed. And the seed has a membrane. The nucleus of the cell has a membrane. And some things even penetrate the membrane. Now, this doesn't happen overnight. Cancer is understood as the end of a long, long journey. But sometimes it happens in a flash. So what cancer are we talking about? Whose cancer are we talking about? This is why it eludes so much analysis. We clump it under the term cancer. That's nonsense. Brain cancer is not prostate cancer, is not leukemia, so on and so forth. So each has to be taken individually, and then each individual has to be understood individually. And that's why this is complicated, but that's why it's fascinating. In any event, at the end of a long journey of assault, the DNA, the double helix, begins to break apart. The nucleotide sequences, the purines and the pyrimidines, these little building blocks that we ultimately call the DNA, that we ultimately call the gene, that we ultimately call the chromosome, that live in the nucleus of the cell, begin to derange. They falter. They fall apart. Bricks. Nucleotides that are the bricks of the DNA begin to fall out of place. And the body runs out of ways to repair the DNA. And ultimately, this triggers a response. And these responses to this attack are variable. And some of them trip the cell's repair and replication mechanism into chaos. And there's lots of things that can do this. But rest assured that the core of the cell, which is the core of you, which is intimately related to your soul, is under assault. And that's how you think of cancer. It got there through all your defenses, which is why if you're talking about preventing it, it's the same old boring story, and yet it's not so boring. It's get healthy. It's create a checklist and see how much in the top 10 of that checklist, and maybe that'll be next week's show, and you're sitting there going, what checklist? The last 16 shows. I did a show on bite last week. Bite. If your bite's off, you know, the hypothalamus doesn't get the messages, and then it can't send out the electrochemical directives, the orders, to that little mutant cell to kill it, to dissolve it, to repair the mechanism that broke, that produced it. Bite, teeth, pH, sleep, biliary patency, the way you look at your life, the way you look at your breast, health in general, the last 16 shows. So what we're evolving here is a checklist. A checklist that you should keep. pH. And be careful with extrapolations. Be careful how you approach this. Yes, pH is important. They extrapolate out of Otto Warburg in 27 that cancer cannot live in the absence of, cancer cannot grow in an alkaline environment. To have a cell go cancerous, there has to be an oxygen deficiency. And that O2 deficiency relates to the calcium metabolism. And that calcium is adequate is what controls the pH. And therefore, pH and preventing cancer are important. Add that one to the checklist, yes. But don't bank on it. You can't think of illness that way. I know lots of people, lots of patients. They have a couple of these things straight. And they bank on it. And then in the end, it's not a pretty picture. So there's this cell that's broken down. where the DNA is deranged. Will it repair? Can you switch off the mechanisms that were switched on? The answer is yes. And we've done it. The problem is the perspective, the perception of how this is done. And that's so tough to get to people, thus these shows that we broadcast. Because once bonds, chemical bonds, switch to aberrant chemical bonds, mutant chemical bonds, once the biochemistry shifts against your favor, you have to infuse it with a massive electromagnetic field to reappropriate the chemistry. You see? Once you hit a chemical powerhouse like the cell with enough negatives to change its chemistry, you're going to have to put a maximum amount of energy back into that cell to seduce it, to persuade it to shift back into the proper normal physiology. And if you have a target-oriented mentality on curing cancer, you're going to lose. And so what do we do in Western science? We look to understand the mechanism, and then we look to deliver these single approaches to how to cure it. And they don't work. We're not winning the war on cancer. Now, yeah, we're going to get into genetics. Now, thank God, we're getting into epigenetics. Epigenetics. In genetics today. On the tip of everybody's tongue. On the tip of the people writing the grants to the National Institute of Health is the word epigenetics. Finally, we're understanding that there are satellite genes that control bigger genes. It's like a planet with a bunch of little planets around it. Like, what is it? Jupiter has 10 moons. Those little moons are the epigenes. And if you can switch the epigenes in the correct way, it'll control the main system. Which is what? Which is finally, we understand that it's not just genetics, it's epigenetics. The environment controls the epigenes, and the epigenes can control the genes themselves. But if you're going to get out of cancer, if you're going to prevent it, you have to make sure that the infusion of energy through lifestyle is abundant. And the way we measure that is through the meridian. That's another topic. Tough to translate to. We've got to get real about this thing, the meridian. An electromagnetic therapy necessary to alter an aberrant chemical bond. I mean, what do you think the metals are? When the metals like mercury get into your body, they seduce the good atoms and they pop out one atom to replace themselves into the molecule. They invade. And once you make a mercury bond, it's a more stable bond. So it doesn't want to leave. So if you just go into your ho-hum of a day thinking that the mercury that got into your system is going to purge out, or the virus that invaded your DNA is going to purge out just in the normal everyday life. No, the chemical bonds made by these assailants are better. They're seducers. When you have children and you raise your children, and they pick up bad habits. They do drugs. They steal. They do things that are not good for themselves. And they persist in their behavior. It's because the chemical bond, think of it this way, the bond that they've made with the aberrant pattern is stronger than the bond that they've made with God. And what do you have to do to change a child's behavior? You have to infuse it with an ever more powerful voltage from above. The cell is doing the same thing. It's asking you, now that it's succumbed, to infuse it with something greater than itself, than its normal mechanism. And your efficacy. You see, this isn't poetry. This is science. The efficacy of that process in which the cell's voltage reaches that higher level, that process is measured by the flow of energy. Now, there's where it really falls apart. Because everybody's hallucinating that. Everybody's got their own version of what that means. And this is where I will tell you, quite frankly, America is young. Very young in its understanding. Its soul is young, which is great, because then tenaciously this great nation pursues an electromagnetic therapy. But it's young in its understanding. And there's many, many variations of this reality. The only thing I can tell you, is when you hug a loved one, when you looked at the person on that glorious day that you met them, that you'd spend the rest of your life with, or the rest of your day with, or 2 years with, but you felt a current, a warm, flowing, loving current move through your body that stopped your indigestion, that focused you into the moment, that relaxed your tissues, that made all your pain go away. That's when you felt an upgrade in your electrical field. We do this every day. And I did that whole rant the other day about pets, dogs and cats. When you pet them, what they're doing, you have to take it to that place. When you're looking at cancer, you have to purge to take it to that place. And as you do, that field is turning on. That's for the infusion. That's the arrowhead of voltage from the training we call medicine that you have to bring to these chemical bonds that are no longer working for you but working against you. And I'm going to harp on this until you don't listen to the show anymore. And I don't really care at a certain point. You're going to hear me talk about this because you're going to get it through and you're going to understand what it is to open a meridian system. And I'm going to do it on the radio until I can't do it anymore. Because you know it. I know you know it. It's in your experience, even if it's a fleeting moment. But you got to search yourself. And you got to remember that moment. And you have to understand that the way you assess and judge the efficacy of therapy is based upon how much this moment, reduced to poetry sometimes, this moment grows. And it only starts with a flicker. So go back to my show. I don't know what show number. It's 10 Signs of Healing, the flickers. You see? You're sick and you're in bed. You know what cancer is? Cancer is a person that looks you in the eye and says, please help me. I don't want to die. And if they're sincere, you begin the biggie. And you give every bit of yourself to their healing because they are worthy. That's the Hippocratic Oath. And you begin this journey. And you don't see miracles in the first week or the first month. With Marianne, it was 1 year for me. 1 year, one full year of grueling therapy. That was Marianne. Of course, that's not her name. 1 year with metastatic melanoma, 12 lung tumors, 2 to 3 tumors in each lung, inoperable. Another 37-year-old woman with 2 beautiful boys, a wonderful husband, checking out. It begins with a flicker. And they're not good at catching those flickers, those little things. When you have to get out of the hole, you got to write down what you have to be thankful for every single day in your healing. And if you write them down and you honor them and you can find the fortitude within yourself to honor them amidst your pain, then they'll grow. And that's God's message to you. Honor God in the small sense, and he'll talk to you more and more and more. And the exercise through which you find God are the exercises we call healing. The coffee enema, there's one. Eating so the pH aligns, there's two. Doing all the things you need to do to get to sleep, there's three. Stretching those tendons to align the body. There's four. Remediating those scars so that the electrical field will flow through. There's five. If your bite is off and you're 50 years old and you always wanted to fix your teeth, but you just never did, and nobody's ever told you that you're not going to open up the full potential of the hypothalamic scanning system, there's six or seven, and so on and so forth. And there are all the exercises to which you have to bring your faith and look for little flickers, not miracles. The miracle is in the totality. The miracle is that if you seek God in your process, you will be honored. That's the miracle. And if it's not in God's plan for you to be here, then you're going to transition. And then you celebrate that. And that's a whole lot of talk. But I learned that as a doctor, the easy way and the hard way. So if you've got that understanding, you've got an edge. But you have to apply that understanding to your exercises. A lot of people I talk to on and off this radio show get faith. I know they do. I hear it in their voice. A lot of you that come to see me, I look at your face and you're there. You're right there. But then when I watch you go out and do it, make the dietary transitions, learn the coffee enemas, then you lose it. So you know it, but you don't know it well enough. And now you have an exercise. It's called your symptom or your illness to learn it. We're done. That's 57 minutes. I had a whole 6-minute intermission that we didn't have time for. A pleasure for me, yes. I hope a pleasure for you. You're going to need to hear the show again. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici, Straight Talk on Health. It's been great. We'll see you next Saturday. God bless.
You've been listening to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Invite your family and friends to the show and learn about Dr. Medici through his website, straighttalk.cc. He'll give you the tools you need to save your health and prevent unnecessary surgeries and harmful drugs. And the best part? You can call in live with your health questions every week. For those of you still holding for Dr. Medici, stay on hold. He'll continue to answer calls for as long as it takes. He's dedicated to your ultimate healing. And remember, to contact his office for an appointment, call Rachel or Johanna at 310-320-1132. That's 310-320-1132. Join Dr. Medici next week at 10 a.m. for more Straight Talk on Health. This show and the information therein has not been evaluated by the FDA, and recommended products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. The information provided on this site is for informational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for advice from your physician or other healthcare professional.